So will biometric scanning keep your personal data safer? A lot of companies seem to think so today. It requires more than just a key or a password. You need to use a physical attribute like your hand, the palm of your hand, your fingerprints. Even your eyes can be scanned. Facial recognition is big now, or it's becoming. And you may need these. You may need to use these attributes to now get inside some airports, hospitals, hotels, grocery stores. Even today, even Disney theme parks increasingly use biometrics, which is technology that identifies you based on your physical or behavioral traits. And it's all for, quote, for added security, or so they say. But is it really safe, is the question. Should we avoid using it all possible? I know if they tried to put something on my forearm or forehead, I'd be like, get lost. I'm not doing that. Beat it. But today, you'll learn why more businesses and governments are using the technology and whether Q's, remember him, James Bond, fake contact lenses, recorded voice, and silicon hand could really get James Bond into the lab to let him save the world. But you're going to find out about this stuff of biometrics today on this episode with our guest, Jeremy Duffy, the geek professor's excellent, knows his deal, knows his stuff. We're going to talk about this with him today on this episode of George Orwell 2084.
If you use the internet, then you face serious threats to your privacy and constitutional rights. George Orwell 2084 is a show like no other. It's time to fight back. Here he is, David Bowron.
So you take basic security precautions every single day. We all do. You use a key to get into your house and car, for that matter. Even if it's keyless, it's still, you still have to have that little component, right? And then it's a push button now in your car. How about logging into your computer with a username and password? Absolutely. You've probably also experienced the panic that comes when you've misplaced keys or you've forgotten your password. It's like you panic. Oh, you know, I gotta get in here and I can't. Well, it isn't just that you can't get what you need if you lose your keys or jot your password on a piece of paper. Someone else could find them and use them as though they were you. Instead of using something like you have, like a key or something you know, like a password, biometrics uses who you are to identify you. Biometrics can use physical characteristics like your face, your fingerprints, irises, veins, it's craziness, or behavioral characteristics like your voice, handwriting, or typing rhythm. Takes all kinds of forms, doesn't it? Unlike keys and passwords, your personal traits are extremely difficult to lose, right? Unless you lose your fingers. Or forget, obviously. They could also be very difficult to copy, some companies claim. For this reason, many people consider them to be safer and more secure than keys or passwords. We're going to talk about that today. Are they really safer? Well, here first, I'm going to give you a background like I always do on this show. I'm going to give you a background, then we're going to get into our guest. But here's the biometric systems, what they use. They say they use the same three steps: enrollment, storage, and comparison. Enrollment is the first time you use the biometric system. It records basic information about you, like your name or identification number. It then captures an image or recording of your specific trait. And then storage. Contrary to what you may see in the movies, most systems don't store a complete image or recording. They instead analyze your trait and translate it into a code or graph. Some systems, though, also record this data onto a smart card that you carry with you. And then you have comparison. So the next time you use that particular system, It compares the trait you present have to the information on file. That it's going to compare what you're telling them and what you're doing and what is scanning to the information that they have on file. So there is some things on file, okay? Then it either accepts or rejects that you are who you claim to be. That's what it's doing. This is common, like if you have one of the newer laptops. It's a feature, is a fingerprint scanner on that laptop. Sometimes on the back of them. Sometimes it's on the front and the keyboard. You can see it in there. And it's bringing, so they're bringing it right to the forefront right now. It's bringing this biometric security to home. And you may think, well, you know, look, I got to use my fingerprint to do this, right? So, you know, nobody could, you know, get in. So if somebody, you know, nobody has my fingerprint, they can't get in there. So systems also use the same three components. A sensor that detects the characteristics being used for identification, computer that reads and stores the information, software that analyzes the characteristic, translates into a graph or code, and performs the actual comparisons. So that's the setup. Those are the steps that we take to set it up as a consumer. And then what I just gave you are the three steps, components, I should say, that systems use when you're using biometrics. So biometric security systems like the fingerprint scanner that's available, I think it's on the IBM ThinkPad. I don't know, it's like T40 something anyway. It's becoming more common for home use. People's hands and fingers are unique, but it's not as unique as other traits like fingerprints or irises. That's why businesses and schools, rather than high security facilities, typically are using hand and finger geometry readers to authenticate users, not to identify them. So Disney theme parks, like I mentioned earlier, for example, use finger geometry readers to grant ticket holders admittance to different parts of the park. So some businesses use hand geometry readers in place of time cards. So what I'm saying here, it's growing. Systems that measure hand and finger geometry use a digital camera and light. To use one, you simply place your hand on a flat surface, align your fingers against several pegs to ensure an accurate reading. It has to be positioned right on there. Then a camera takes one or more pictures of your hand and the shadow it casts. It uses this information to determine the length, width, thickness and curvature of your hand or fingers. It translates that information into a numerical template. Voice prints. That's something else being used. Your voice is unique because of the shape of your vocal cavities and the way you move your mouth when you speak. To enroll in a voice print system, you either say the exact words or phrases that it requires, or you give an extended example of your speech so that the computer can identify you no matter which words you say. Iris scanning. This is like the stuff you see like in James Bond movies, the Bourne Identity movies, you know, those kind of things. This is what you're seeing in there. There's the other one. It's escaping me right now. Whatever. You know what I'm talking about. But it seems futuristic, you know? But at the heart of the system, it is a simple CCD digital camera. It uses both visible and near-infrared light to take a clear, high-contrast picture of a person's iris with a near-infrared light. A person's pupil is very black, making it easy for the computer to isolate the pupil and the iris. So when you look into an iris scanner, either the camera focuses automatically or you use a mirror or audible feedback from the system to make sure that you are positioned correctly. And so typically these things, usually your eye is 3 to 10 inches from the camera. When the camera takes a picture, the computer locates, that's what it does. Some people object to these biometrics for cultural or religious reasons. I could certainly understand that. Others, just like, they just, it's part of it and they just do it. They don't even think about it, which isn't wise either. And look, you've got to assess the risk and assess what it is that they're doing and when the company that you're dealing with and why they're asking for them. And what are they going to do with them? Are they going to store them? How safe is it to store there? Would you, in this case, we've covered a lot of breaches over the last few months, Yahoo being a big breach. There was Google and Android. Would you give it to companies like that? Because they're going to be asking for it. I would say absolutely not. They've been historically bad with your data. I would run from companies like that. But others imagine a world in which cameras identify and track them as they walk down the street. Look around where you are. If you're not in your home, look around. If you're in a metro area, in a city, look around and look at the cameras there are out there right now. They're everywhere. Google Streets maps are on the street and streets, the section of the, you know, where they could zoom in on businesses and homes, businesses, areas. They're everywhere, and they've taken these images. Now there's not a camera there specifically that was there, or a satellite image, whatever. But in places in Europe, Switzerland specifically, they don't even allow that there because it's an invasion of privacy. Okay. But this is what people, you know, they just think. They track them as they walk down the street. They follow their activities. So those cameras that you're seeing could be doing that. And buying patterns without their consent. That's the problem with it. They wonder whether companies will just sell the biometric data the way they sell email addresses and phone numbers. You bet they will. Just look, by now, if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, I think we've proven to you without a shadow of a doubt that big companies are collecting your data and selling it. That's what they're doing. So people may also wonder whether a huge database will exist somewhere that contains vital information about everyone in the world and whether that information would be safe there. Well, there already is a huge database somewhere in the world, and it's near Bluffdale, Utah, is where it is. And that is the International Spy Center for the NSA. That's their major hub of where they keep this vital information. It is a massive facility. And it only opened up in 2014. And you may think, well, it's safe there, the NSA, you know, it's safe. Well, think again. NSA has been hacked. They themselves have been hacked. So I don't think they're real good stewards of our information either. So at this point, biometric systems don't have the capability to store catalog information about everyone in the world, but they're getting close. The Bluffdale, Utah facility can collect and store information about everybody that's located within the United States of America, and then some. Shocking, but true. Most store minimal amount of information at this point. The systems that are out there, I'm talking about the biometric systems that are out there. They don't generally store a recording or real-life presentation of a person's traits, okay? They're snippets. They convert the data into code. So most systems also work in only one specific place where they're located, like an office building or hospital. The information in one system isn't necessarily compatible with another, although several organizations are trying to standardize biometrics data. We know that'll happen because it's easier and it's less, it costs less. So are biometrics methods really safe? Well, let's talk about something before we get into our guest, because he knows a lot about this. But let's take, for instance, that there have already been cases of biometric hacking on a massive scale. We're not talking like a little, you know, here and there. We're talking massive scale. And I'm going to give you the biggest breach, and we're going to go through that a little bit, and then we're going to get into our guest. Estimated 22 million people had their personal data stolen in a massive data breach at the Office of Personnel Management. That's the HR department for the federal government, if you're not familiar with who the Office of Personnel Management are. But this includes, including in this breach, and that was 5.6 million fingerprints included in this breach. Well, that's a lot. That's a lot. And in that breach included privacy expert and mother of two, Rebecca Balabaco. Her information, Ms. Balabaco, she received a letter from OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, informing her that her personal information, including her 10 fingerprints, were stolen in the breach. So understand, she had submitted years of personal information, including all of her, you know, her social security number, previous addresses for like, you know, 5 years going back. 5 years, that's how they do it, typically. For a government background check required for her job. And now this personal information of hers is in the hands of a criminal. And I noticed she was frustrated because she was like, look, I don't know what to do. They stole my information here, and I don't know what to do about it. See, that's the danger. I'm giving you the danger of biometric technology. It's growing. It's becoming more widespread. And with that, so do the risks to your personal privacy. All right? Because you can't change your fingerprints. You can't change your iris, your facial recognition. You know, you can't change those things. So be very, very selective of which companies that you decide you want to give them your fingerprint. Currently you could use that on, say, your iPhone, for example. I don't have it enabled on mine. I won't do it. So for me, I just, you know what? I'll use a password every time. My screen locks, I'll use a password. I will not use the fingerprint system in Apple, because Apple is known to sell your information. Apple is known to be sloppy with your information. Apple used to be one of those companies where we could feel pretty safe going to and, you know, giving our information to. This is back years, 10 years ago, say. But now that's not the case. Now they even admit, hey, well, you know, we've been breached. And our systems today are, you know, they have been breached. A lot of people say, well, I just put on MacKeeper on there, which slows your system down incredibly. MacKeeper does. But MacKeeper has been breached. So, I mean, it's just, you know, there's the confusion of what to do. But there's that feature. If you look in your settings on your phone, it's in there. You'll see it in there. And, you know, if you're using it, you know, turn it off, because this is just the bottom line. You don't just want to have your fingerprints floating around out there for companies to use and possibly sell. It's all today, just remember, it's all about collecting and selling your personal information, including your fingerprints. One problem. Second problem, if they're doing that, which they are, we know that this is happening, then the criminals could do it too. All right? So if the government wants to do it and big tech companies want to do it, they're going to make it easier for the criminals can do it, because your stuff's floating around out there. We've already seen that we have a mess in the United States of America, and we cannot expect any protection from big companies in terms of our cybersecurity, because they have failed miserably and continue to fail miserably. It doesn't seem to be getting any better. It's getting worse. So we don't want our personal information, including our biometrics, floating around out there. Facebook, upload a photo with facial recognition using your physical attribute. It's a growing industry. It's expected to be, you know, billions of dollars in a few short years, and hundreds of millions of scanners all around the world are being used. So we're going to discuss this now with our guest, Jeremy Duffy.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Well, it's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. You'll find a whole host of shows and a lineup of great content back at AmericaOutLoud.com.
Today you face serious threats to your freedoms, such as data collection and weak security by using free email accounts, unwarranted surveillance and cyber crimes. Ransomware, malware, and a host of other viruses are constantly attacking. Privacy of your online data is freedom. For pennies on the dollar, you can prepare now before it's too late. You too can use the same strength of protection that even Swiss banks are using. Begin today and start regaining your online privacy. Solutions for homes and businesses are found by visiting privacyabroad.com.
All right, so we're talking today with Jeremy Duffy, and in regards to biometric scanning and hacking and authentication, we're going through all that. Let me back up though, tell you a little about Jeremy. He calls himself the Geek Professor, and he has over 20 years of experience, including 10 years with the Department of Defense, protecting government and military computing from nation-state adversaries. Obviously, very, very important. He's an experienced teacher and trainer with a talent for explaining complicated concepts in simple ways to people of all ages and technical skill levels. That is so needed. And he's also provided training and briefings to the FBI, the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, the State Department, military bases from Alaska to Florida. And he believes strongly in educating people, very strongly, so that to prevent the horrific stories that we're hearing on identity theft and ransomware and all these other host of problems that we face in this digital age. And today, as I mentioned, we're talking about the biometric area, and it seems to be a fast-growing segment out there. And basically, you know, the question's this, Jeremy. And we're going to go. I want to talk to you today about the Office of Personnel Management breach that occurred actually a few years ago, but it continued to evolve. You know, up until this year, was still evolving of how much was taken from there, the data that came out of there. But really, do you think biometric scanning will really keep our personal data safe? Or can't.
Okay. Thinking of a way to answer that question exactly. What I can say is that the way that people are using biometrics right now, it doesn't make me comfortable.
Well,
let's
define them first. I'm sorry. I don't want to cut you off. I'm sorry to cut you off. But let's define biometrics so people understand, because I didn't do that. So let's go ahead and just define it. So break it down for people, okay?
Are you asking me to do that?
Yeah.
I can do that.
Yeah. No, yeah, definitely. Go ahead.
Okay. So let's get specific. You have laptops, you have phones, they have fingerprint readers on them. So is that safe? Well, I don't know. I haven't looked into it myself. What I do know is that for it to be safe, they have to record the data a certain way. They have to only use a mathematical formula and not an actual print scan. Because if they do, now you're leaving copies of your fingerprints on your phone, on your computer. And we already know that computers are hard to secure. We already know that stuff gets hacked. And so you make it possible for the bad guys to get your fingerprints. And then they can use that to open your locks, open your doors, open your laptops, your computers, your phones, etc. And you already mentioned the OPM who had fingerprints on file, and now those fingerprints are gone. They were part of the hack. And so your fingerprints are out there, and the bad guys have them. So I really think that we're really not doing biometrics the way they should be. It is possible for them to be used well, but I don't think we're doing it. I don't know anybody that is doing it properly, to be honest. Not to say that they aren't. Out there somewhere, somebody is saying, I'm an engineer, I made this work properly, don't bag on my work. I'm not doing that. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
But generally speaking, I find that these companies are very sloppy, and I personally am not going to trust them with biometric data, which is stuff you cannot replace, because
no.
It's who you are.
That's exactly
right. Not going to trust him with that until I know a lot more. And I'm a computer security guy, and I'm still not comfortable with it. So I'm hoping to instill a little bit of caution in other people to just think about this and maybe take it a few steps back.
Absolutely. Well, but they'll say, well, Jeremy, it's easy, and I could just touch my thumb on my iPhone and log in, and I don't have to, enter any of them. What do you say to those people? Because there's millions of them out there.
Well, it's easier to leave your doors unlocked, too.
It's a breeze. Why don't you just
leave? But there are risks that come with that.
Leave the keys in your car when you go to a mall.
Well, I have a password on your computer. Is not the only factor. You have to consider ease of use and possible potential consequences.
Especially
today. And then balance them and then come to an informed decision. I'm not saying don't use biometrics. I'm saying there are risks that come with it. And you need to be fully aware of what's going on before you make a decision. Don't just do it because you didn't put any, because you don't have all the information.
Absolutely. Yeah, think through this. Right? Think through this and the advice.
Well, and increase your knowledge level a little bit too, and that's what we're trying to do here today. I'm sure we'll get into some of the risks of biometrics and some of the possibilities, the things you can do with it as a bad guy.
Well, that's right, and I think we'll go there right now. Back a few years back, there was a massive data breach at the Office of Personnel Management. Which included a privacy expert there by the name of Rebecca Balabeco. She received this letter from OPM, and this came about a year after the breach, informing her that her personal information, personal information was addresses, phone numbers, and her social security number were breached. But this really stopped her dead in her tracks. This breach included her 10 fingerprints that were stolen in the breach. She had submitted years of personal information. All of her, government background checks required for her job were on there. All of this was on there. And I'll quote what she said after she received this letter, quote, "I don't know what to do. I work in this field. I am a security researcher. I am a privacy researcher, and I do not know what to do. I can't see there's much I can do at this point to protect myself." End of quote. And that's what she said after she learned her fingerprints were stolen, because as all of us know, we could change a password, but when you look at your fingerprints, really hard to change those. And so that is alarming, and it really caught her, and I believe it was, wasn't it, Jeremy, you could back me up, I think it was 5.6 million fingerprints stolen. Is that right?
Yeah, it wasn't everybody's, but it was a lot.
Yeah, because the breach was like over 20 million, but we don't really know, but I know that it was estimated to be at around 20 million, about 25% of that figure were sets of fingerprints. That are in there, because you have to, in order to work there at the Office of Personnel Management, you had to do your fingerprints, and it's digital now. If you go do your fingerprints, I was in the securities business, so I know, and I remember actually when it went digital, it was about 9-10 years ago, and I went in, I'm like, oh, wait, hey, where's the ink now, and the little pad that we just roll our fingers on, and that ended, and they said, well, these are the new machines, and you would just scan your finger. And I'm like, watching us, I'm like, ooh, that's digital. Where's that going? Who has my fingerprints in here? And are they going to be good stewards over it? And that's what we're discussing today, are these biometrics. So we define biometric. So obviously we know now that biometric hacking can take place, because it already has. So let's discuss what this means to all of us going forward, with all of these banks and companies that I've read many articles that are, hey, we're going to go biometrics. That's what we're going to do. And I hope that they give us all an opportunity to choose, between biometrics and strong passwords. I really do, because if it was me making a choice, if I didn't have that choice, I would be bailing that organization. But I want to be able to create strong passwords. But let's talk about this, Jeremy. This is scary to me, because if somebody has your fingerprints, there's all kinds of stuff they could do. And you can't...
Well, if companies begin to rely on fingerprints, and at the same time, fingerprints are readily available because of bad security practices, then you have the perfect storm of security awfulness, especially if there's a myth out there that fingerprint security is secure, because then things that are done with your fingerprint will map back to you, and nobody will believe that it wasn't you, because they think it's secure, and it's not.
Yeah, like it really wasn't me, but they're like, no, it was you. Your fingerprints were used for this. Is that what you're saying? That could happen.
Yeah, exactly right. It was your finger. No, it wasn't.
this is a problem. So let's talk about how this even happened. You know, we're talking about the Office of Personnel. This is the government agency that was hacked breached in a big way. Jeremy, I got to ask you, how could this stuff even happen? I mean,
sorry, I have to laugh.
I know.
How is this first thing, possible? Let me clear up something. The Office of Personnel Management is essentially the HR department of a large section of the federal government, which is to say the people who were hacked, whose data was lost, were in a multitude of agencies. They were parts of the military, parts of the DOD, parts of the State Department, various other agencies, not just the Office of Personnel Management. So how does this happen? The same way all data breaches happen. Sloppy. Sloppiness, bad security practices, incompetence. And the thing is that, and I want to be kind for a moment to the administrators of the OPM, because they probably knew about these problems. They probably tried to do something about it, but weren't allowed to because of budget reasons and management who said, well, you know, we don't have that in the budget right now and various rules. But I'm just going to say overall incompetence, not these guys specifically. It's not their fault, I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, but I understand.
There actually were audits of the security system of the OPM for years prior to the event that said, you guys are in trouble. You need to fix this. This is a problem. And that was years prior and for several years. It wasn't just one time. So they failed several security audits and then they got hacked. So how did it happen? How could it not have?
Right. Well, they were ignoring their audits. I mean, how... okay. When an audit's performed, and I can only relate this to financial services, you have to respond to those audits. If they find that you're sloppy with client data or something else, you have to present to them in writing what you're doing to fix that problem. So what you're saying here is that even though these audits, they were failing these audits, and how many we don't know, but they failed several, it sounds like, they could just ignore them?
Well, based on what I read, yeah. Because just because somebody says you've done a bad thing, this is a problem, it means nothing if there's no accountability, if there's no consequence. And that is definitely a consistent problem that I've seen among the federal government.
Yeah, that's obviously a problem, one that needs to be corrected, like, as soon as possible.
Yes.
I mean, there has to be accountability. There has to be. I mean, and it doesn't seem like it would be that complicated in this case.
Oh, it's not complicated. It becomes complicated when you include people's political issues, the bureaucratic nonsense, the pride issues, the people who are not going to admit fault and basically shuffle things under the rug, and they get away with it because, and going back to the point of this program and what I'm doing as well, the people don't know. They don't realize that they weren't held accountable. They do things like offer free credit monitoring or whatever to make it seem like they're doing something when they're really not.
Yeah, that seems to be an ongoing issue, but for those of us now, and that gives a good explanation of how that happened, sloppiness, incompetence, obviously, with this OPM breach. But in terms of, you know, we'll pull this back into the homes, into the businesses and companies with, I think I was reading something by 2019, biometrics are expected to be a $25 billion industry. So it's about the money again. Here we go. You know, biometrics, $25 billion industry with more than 500 million biometric scanners used all over the world.
Yeah, fantastic.
That's the stats. That came from Mark Goodman. I want to quote who I got that from. Mark Goodman, advisor to Interpol and the FBI. That's it right there. So we're going to be bombarded with this. Our listeners are going to have to make decisions in terms of their fingerprints or facial recognition, because it's just not now fingerprints, but facial recognition. Or using a physical attribute. I'm not sure what that is.
Well, voice, for example.
Yeah.
And gait recognition, which is to say the way that you walk can also identify you.
Yeah, he had a limp on his left. You know, that's how they get these bank robbers, right? They have the height bar when you're leaving the door, you know, and they,
right.
they could. Now we're talking, it's a digital way of putting all this together, but this is obviously a huge growing problem that has massive implications by what we have seen so far up to this point with the epidemic of cybersecurity breaches that we have seen and we're continuing to see on a regular basis. I could just see this becoming even more of a nightmare. It has the possibility and the potential of becoming even more of a nightmare for people.
Are you tired of having to remember all your passwords? Wouldn't it be nice to have all your important files, usernames, and passwords in one secure location? Finally, there's a solution for homes and enterprises. Swiss Safe will store and protect all your files and passwords using military-grade encryption. Swiss Safe is the preferred online digital vault for Swiss financial institutions such as UBS, Allianz, and AXA Winterthur. Create ultra-strong passwords that you never have to remember again. Send files securely to anyone at any time. Use a patented data inheritance feature for your beneficiaries. For more information, visit MySwissSafe.com. That's MySwissSafe.com.
So I guess what we need to do is let's break this down a little bit. It's upon us. We're going to be faced with it. We can't. Let's first do this. When we make the decision to put our fingerprint somewhere, explain to our listeners where that fingerprint goes. Like if it's an iPhone, let's just say this. It's an iPhone. You decide to turn on. I think you have to go to your settings. I'll look in mine right now. You have to go to your settings under accessibility, and then it's rest finger to open. You could either... That's a toggle switch. You turn it on or off. Mine's off. And then you could open your iPhone with a Touch ID. So it's in your iPhones right now. This option, if you would. And it's an easier, you know, look, it's easier. So is scanning your eyeball, you know, to get your financial information, you know, as Wells Fargo. That's what Wells Fargo wants to do, by the way. I don't know if you
lovely.
Read this. Yeah, they want
no,
to
I've not heard of that.
I'll tell you about it real quick. Because the listeners, there's a bunch of people with Wells Fargo still, even after they created millions of accounts for people that didn't sign for them. But Wells Fargo, it will begin to offer a smartphone app with biometric authentication, making all your financial information just an eye scan away. Mm-hmm. That's what's going on. So that's where we're at. So let's break it down. I mean, when people, for example, this iPhone, when people turn that on, where does your fingerprint go? I mean, does it go to Apple and it's in their database like forever?
Well, when you talk about computing devices and ones that are connected to an internet, a network of any kind, the data flows is an incredibly complex and varied thing. So I can't answer that question. What I can say is that I don't know and you don't know. And because we don't know, we can't assume that it's safe. What we know is that it's connected to the cell phone network and it's connected to Apple. And do they send that data? Could be. There's nothing to stop them that I'm aware of. We already know that when people use online services like the famous, the Apple breach of their image storage.
Yes.
Do you remember this?
I do.
There were lots of famous people whose very private, let's say, photos were exposed to the internet. And they assumed that it was kept secure. I'm betting that some of those people didn't even realize it was backed up in the cloud. So point is, you can't trust that the data that is captured does not get transmitted somewhere else unless you know a lot about that system or have some kind of very strong assurances you've really researched the issue. And I haven't. I'm a computer guy, but we can't know everything.
No,
all I can
no.
tell you and your listeners is that, generally speaking, assume that data given to one person spreads to other people. Because right now, it's better for security, for convenience. It's better for the user experience. It's better for companies. They make so much money on your data. Everybody wants to share your data. They want your data to go everywhere because it benefits anyone and everyone until somebody abuses it. And that's just a write-off. They write off the fraud. They write off the identity theft. It's a cost of doing business. It doesn't affect them. It affects you, which is why you are the one that has to pay attention to this. You are the one that has to resist it because nobody else benefits from that kind of security. Mm. Nobody else benefits from making it hard to get your data. So they want to make it easy. Their modus operandi is to share and distribute.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. And it's a growing segment of the business world is data. That's a bit big business here we're talking. So they want it.
It's enormous. And it has been for decades. People don't realize it. But data sharing is one of the biggest businesses out right now. They don't really have products. You are the product. And all the information about you, they call it data brokering.
That's exactly what's going on. And it puts our privacy, our security, our finances, bank information, all at risk. Is what it's done, it can if you don't handle it correctly, and it's continuing to millions and millions of people every single day. So as we wrap this up with the biometrics, I mean, what would be your advice for people? Just I guess it would be on a password. Would you tell them, you know, strong passwords?
Okay. Well, generally speaking, my advice is to avoid and resist the use of biometrics whenever possible. I realize that sounds a little tin hat, but the point is this is a huge security problem because of how easy it is to capture that information and to replicate it and to use it against you. I could give you a whole variety of ways. I actually have a briefing on this that's becoming increasingly more relevant as time passes. Hmm. But as to your question of what you would do with passwords, if you're given a choice of a password, use a password. On an Android system, they have what's called a pattern lock. I think that's a really good compromise because it's not a password, but it's not as simple as a four-digit PIN either. You can draw a picture, essentially, on the screen, which is a very nice, quick way to unlock the phone without it being a big deal.
Right.
When you're talking about computers and websites, I recommend using a rule rather than a password. And the rule for me is, generically speaking, I'm not giving you my rule, is I use information that's in the title of the web page. I have a pattern that I use.
Right.
And to that, I add a mathematical equation. So 2 + 2 = 6. That's six extra digits, numbers, and special characters. And I add it to the end of every password. It's easy for me to remember because it's the same math.
Right.
So if I look at a website, I already know what the password is. It's this pattern with this math. And then if the passwords get compromised, I change the math. And my password is still secure. We're talking 10 to 15 digits with very little effort. Numbers, special characters, letters, all of it. And it's easy. It's easy. Now, I don't use that for my highest security websites, things that are attached to my money, my email, of course, being the most important account you have.
Yes.
I have other rules for those. But generally speaking, this is a very easy way for anybody to make strong passwords.
Yeah, that's great advice right there. Really, really good. It's a good formula is what it is. Good formula to use.
Yeah, you pick one that works for you. But the key is it cannot be the same password on every website, and it has to be long and complex. But you can take weak passwords and add math to the end and make them strong passwords.
Right, absolutely. My father was a mathematician. He would have loved this formula, by the way.
Of course he would.
Yeah, a big trigonometry, geometry guy. He would have loved that. He would have had all kinds of formulas. Nobody would have been able to figure them out. But he would have locked himself out of his own system. But, but in any case, that's great advice. Excellent advice as we go into this biometric age. It's upon us, everybody. It's upon us. So we have to be ready for it. Let's be prepared, okay? And Jeremy, again, go ahead. Do you have is the briefing that you mentioned on this on your website yet or no?
I don't think so. I've been a little lax on my website stuff for a while. I mean, I've had this briefing for several years. It needs updates. I need to get in there and spruce things up and clean things up. But it's something I put together to educate people in about an hour in a one-on-one setting. So we're talking like a seminar, a conference, that kind of thing. And I don't remember how much of that is currently on my website. But generally speaking, you don't have to be an expert. That's my modus operandi. You just need to know that these companies, just because they put together a capability, doesn't mean they've thought it through. It doesn't mean they've protected it. It doesn't mean it's safe. And it's not just the government that's incompetent. If you think that companies are safe, go to, what's that website that tracks data breaches? I can't remember.
There's Norse.
Do a search on it.
Yeah. I think Norse.com does. Norse.
Data breach DB, I think it is, but it's not hard to find, but it keeps track of the ones that you never see in the news, and there's thousands of them, thousands of data breach instances.
I've seen that map. I know which one you're talking about. It is really frightening to see all that going on in like different countries and where the attacks are coming from, and it's amazing, actually. But your website's thegeekprofessor.com, and we've listed this as well in your description who you are in the bio for you on our show, along with your website. Is there anything else that you want our listeners to have? Any other information you want to send them to, websites or anything at all?
Well, the only other thing that I'm doing is on my YouTube channel. I have some videos I put together to make this easier for people, because some people prefer to read, some people prefer the videos. So you can check out my channel. It doesn't have a custom name yet, so you'll have to search it on YouTube. But you could probably get a link to it. I can send it to you and post it for people. But that's pretty much it. Just trying to get the word out in as many different formats as I can to support different people's learning styles.
Absolutely. And you're open to doing in-person training at companies? Are you open to that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
I've done
briefings all over the place. Well, anywhere. I mean, if they're paying the travel costs, that's fine.
Sure.
I'll go wherever you want.
Heck, that's right.
I'm really looking to go into Japan right now, if anybody's taking.
Hey, that's you never know who's listening. So, yeah, no, that's open. Well, that's good you brought that up, and I'm glad you did, because we do have businesses and companies listening in to this call, and it's good that you're open to that as well, and you'll go to these briefings. I think that companies today and businesses of all sizes are really looking for people to come in and really give them this type of information, because it's not really being given to them, and it fills a void is what I'm trying to say for them, and gives
them
employees. Yeah, it only takes one. I say it all the time on the show. It only takes one employee clicking on a malicious link. One. And it can open up the whole entire business and the whole entire company to a host of problems that you don't want to have. And so by educating the consumer, and in your case, going to businesses and companies, I hope that they're listening, and I hope that they will contact you and will get you over to their companies to do these briefings. I think that'd be great. Again, thanks for being on the
show,
Jeremy. Appreciate it very much. And if you want to send me anything else to post for this call on the website, feel free to do that, and I'll have it posted for you, okay?
Sounds good.
All righty. Jeremy, thanks again.